Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 587, Science Faction Poop and Plane Fuel.
Oh no, so like you're saying that when I shit in my high school math teacher's gas tank, I was actually shitting high propulsion jet fuel, which would anything make him just more like more badass on the road.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure how you got to your high school teacher's like Civic from plane fuel. I doubt they were taking the same octane.
I don't know, Bobby, have you ever seen like Honda's a great engine? It really is. Like, have you, like, it's...
It'll run on shit.
Well, it could run... I mean, if shit is jet fuel. Now, could it run on shit? Doubtfully. But if you're telling me that shit is secretly jet fuel...
That's what you need. You know, fuck all these Ford F-150s with their quote-unquote flex fuel. Like, I don't need no goddamn corn ethanol bullshit. That's not helping me. I want something that runs on dog shit.
Besides, stop defending that math teacher. He died in a car accident, killed a whole family on his way home later that day. So, like, it's... His car gave out. I don't know. Hey, Bobby... You're a mechanical guy. If I shit in a car engine, diagnose this. You're Dr. Yes. House.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You're gonna plug up the fuel pump for sure. The thing is, it's gonna be an intermittent plug because much like the ping pong ball trick where you put a ping pong ball in somebody's gasoline, the poo's gonna float on its own. I mean, it depends on your diet, but I know your diet, you got a lot of fat in it, so the poo's gonna float, and then when it's the fuel pump at the bottom of the tank starts sucking, it's gonna pull it down and jam up the fuel pump line. It's gonna stall out, but then when it stalls out, that poo is gonna float back to the top. It'll start right back up in a few minutes. It's gonna bother the hell out of them. Chunks of poo will eventually ruin your fuel, fuel pump,
I mean,
and your
like,
fuel filter.
Wouldn't the gasoline break down the poop as well? And question: would this affect in any way the air conditioning system, the vent system? If I had the heat on,
no,
I wouldn't.
No,
I wouldn't smell burning shit anywhere in the car.
No. I mean, certainly not until it starts getting sucked up. I think it's gonna, like the actual poo itself will get sucked up and jam up the fuel pump before it actually does any damage. If there are any feces expert mechanics out there who've run into this problem before and want to tune in, please go ahead and contact us on Facebook. I'm pretty confident. I think you'll have intermittent off and on as the poo goes up and down, depending on your diet, and then eventually the poo itself will jam up and ruin your fuel pump.
Now, I say this as somebody who knows nothing of cars. I believe that the gasoline would dissipate the poop. And I think that's why we're here to announce that we're having our own live stream spinoff here on Science Faction. It's our own form of Mythbusters where we conduct real science.
It's poo roulette, and one of our gas tanks gets poo, well,
that,
and we don't know which
we,
one.
Or we just shit in a stranger's gas tank and wait for them, to, like, while they're in, like, Vaughn's or something, in like, Albertson's. And then we just, like, follow them.
We're wearing lab coats and taking notes. But we have to have modified lab coats. So it's a lab coat, but it's got that little butt flap that the old-timey pajamas had in Western
movies.
I'm
cutting the sleeves off my lab coat. Oh, and I'm also going to be wearing those leather gloves with the fingers cut off.
Oh, and speaking of the badass leather glove wearer of this show, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Ricardo. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing wonderful. I do have a question for you. How much clout would you have in the science world to, like, basically be show up to work like that and not just a one-time thing? This is your style. Could Tim White do it?
It depends. If you were a gut microbiome person, I kind of think, like, it would just be your calling card, so to speak.
He's the only guy in the lab with a mullet.
It would certainly be weird if you were, like, a guy who researched hair, you know, like there's certain people who more questions would be asked.
Okay, question is: archaeology, I think, would actually lend itself to this field. Archaeology.
Yeah, you do. I've taken an entire class in coprolites before, so you do have some poo time in the arc field.
Gotcha. Okay, same question about gas tanks, but with a coprolite.
Then it would sink. Might not get sucked up, might just act like a rock in there, depending on whether or not it interacts with the fuel pump. You might be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm essentially just dropping rocks in your fucking gas
tank. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's not healthy.
Yeah. No, not at all. But eventually you'll get to it. You know, it's funny. It's funny that you bring this up, Damien. A little peek behind the scenes. Recently, Damien and I found ourselves at a party of a comedian friend of ours. And, you know, I haven't been to parties in a long ass time, like 2 years. And so I was pretty psyched to go there. And we're hanging out outside. And I mentioned something about throwing poo on somebody to Damien's wife, who looked horrified. And I think I mentioned Damien's name in there. And then she went like, wait, are you saying Damien has thrown poo on people? And I had to start laughing because I was like, I wasn't aware he stopped. Like, I didn't know.
They called me Damien the Zoo Mercado for nothing, you know? Like, there's a legitimate chance when you're going past the primate den of my house that you might catch some pink eye.
And she was just so shocked. She was like, I even quoted her one of your, I would say, infamous lines that you had at one point when we were pulling a mission where we had to get some poo to put on somebody's car. And as I will quote the audience as I quoted her, which is, as you said, looking into a dingy alley where we had suggested you shit into a bag to throw on this guy's car, you looked at us and gave the most sincere response ever, which is, I'm not saying I won't shit in that bag. I'm just saying I won't do it in that alley. And that was like as far as a boundary as you had in terms of shitting on things.
That was Shakespearean. I feel like it goes like that. There's something about Yorick, you know? Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, the other guys there were like, oh, God. And then we had to go shit someplace else into
we
a bag.
We went to
and
our
then...
buddy's house, which was a mile down the road. He had a,
yes,
he had
but
a
then
comfortable
we had to drive...
bathroom facility.
But then we had to drive back with one of us hanging their entire torso out the window, holding the bag of feces, because you don't take a bag of feces in a two-door coupe with three dudes in it.
Well, Bobby's car, Bobby's rules. But if I was, it was my car.
There's no trunk option. All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Article number one, ain't all it's cracked gut to be.
I'm not going to give you the reaction you want from that, no. No, and
see,
if anybody at home
to me
laughed,
is a pun.
Shame. Shame on you, you nerdy scientists who love your puns. Shame on all of you.
Ironic that we were talking about poo here, because we're going to get into it, the poo, real deep on this one. So very, very
God
interesting.
God damn it, I just bought these shoes. Motherfucker. Can you tell me? These are Armani's. Knockoffs. These are Bruno Mollies. The same shoe that Sir O.J. Simpson wore when he murdered two people.
You know you already got those on discount at the outlet because they had poo on them.
Listen, I know what poo I brought into the house. I'm going to know what poo I also have from this article, and I'm sending you the bill.
If you can send me one more bill from the poo outlets, I'm going to be pissed.
I keep buying your wife shoes from there, and she keeps looking at me like I'm an ass.
So this is a really interesting story published in Cell Press, and it's interesting because it's a cautionary tale of one of the most important and constantly talked about principles of science. We talk about it here all the time, causation versus correlation. So there have been numerous studies, many of which we have actually covered on this show, discussing correlations between ASD, autism spectrum disorder, and certain imbalances in gut microbiomes. Now, we have known about this correlation for a very long time. Early reports in the 80s and 90s, once we started kind of diagnosing people with autism, came out where people with ASD would say, like, okay, I understand the behavioral issues, I understand the learning issues, I understand this, I understand this, but what's up with the gut issues? Like, my son constantly has gut problems. This is, like, a really big deal. There's has diarrhea a lot, has a lot of issues with his gut, and for at least the past 10 years or so, a lot of studies coming out are suggesting that, hey, maybe the genetic differences in autism spectrum disorder are causing differences in gut microbiome, or even the more tantalizing thing, maybe there's some issues in gut microbiomes that are actually causing some of our ASD symptoms. Wouldn't that be crazy? We could fix some of the ASD symptoms with just a nice little poo pill there. So that is where we were up until this week.
Yeah, I've been working out lately, you know, taking I'm on a stack, part of it's poo pills. I get it from a guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no gel capsule around it. It's just like he balls it up like bread balls.
You know, they say rabbit poo is already a poo capsule made.
No, I can tell you that's not rabbit. It's somebody who eats a lot of fish. I can tell you that.
It's definitely a Polish guy.
This poo can't screw in a light bulb by itself.
This poo is notoriously bad at everyday tasks.
Don't even get me started on its submarine.
So this new paper this week cautions that these imbalances might be more attributable to the limited dietary preferences of some individuals with ASD rather than a cause of ASD or a direct symptom of it. So really, really interesting. What they're saying is we know that often ASD is accompanied by a very narrow dietary preference. We've actually covered cases on the show where sometimes that dietary preference comes down to like three foods and that's the only thing the person will eat. Well, what they're saying is what we're seeing in the gut microbiome isn't because the genetic causes of autism are also causing this problem. And it's not that the microbiome is the problem that's causing autism symptoms. What we're seeing is the autism symptoms include limited dietary preference, and that limited dietary preference is what's coming back to cause a limited and impaired gut microbiome, which then causes all of the gut problems that we see in people with ASD. At least that's the hypothesis.
Is it possible that, you know, there's some ways that the body just knows? Maybe for some reason, the body knows that these foods are the magic formula to setting off this life-altering disorder. And mm-hmm. for some reason, the body's compass just gravitates that way. Like, how do we complete this autism spell? We need a diet of onions, hot dogs, and Eye of Newt.
Well, in order to come to this conclusion, they used a totally different style of genetic microbiome tracing. So they actually had a really interesting research design. So what they did is they got about 100 kids who were diagnosed with ASD. Then they got about 100 kids who weren't diagnosed with ASD, were completely unrelated to them. And then they got not as many, like 70 or so, who were brothers or sisters of the kids who were diagnosed with ASD, but who themselves did not have ASD. And the reason you do that is then you're able to start teasing out things like not only genetic effects, but environmental effects. Keep in mind, the microbiome is heavily influenced by the environment. You know, you get your starter microbiome from your mom, and you start acquiring things from your environment very soon thereafter, and you continue to kind of add to that gut microbiome throughout your life. And so where you are, the family you grow up in, the food that you eat, the place you live, all that stuff will affect the microbiome. So they did a really interesting way to kind of double control this, one being totally unrelated individuals and one being non-ASD siblings of the ASD individuals. Really neat. And what they were able to do is do kind of next generation genetic sequencing where they can sequence entire genomes of the microbiome as instead of doing just a sampling method. And in doing so, they seem to show that what they're seeing is the ASD symptoms surrounding eating seem to be what are related to the problems with gut microbiomes, where if you take some of the ASD individuals who don't have as strict eating or as many problems eating, they don't necessarily have those same issues in the gut microbiome. And then in being able to control with the siblings, with the non-ASD related siblings, you can say, okay, well, these kids have access to this amount of food and this is the genetic profile that they have. And given all of these things and the fact that they were both probably seated by their mother, the same woman, i.e. blah, 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 what's going on with their comparative gut microbiomes? Really, really interesting work. And it echoes something we say here all the time. Think of causation versus correlation. The example that I always give, it was one that was taught to me in undergrad, and I like it because it's so ridiculous, is as ice cream sales go up in any given area, drowning deaths go up. And this is a very one-to-one ratio. You prove it almost every place you go. And, you know, if you were a politician, you could stand up and say, we need to ban this ice cream. Our fucking kids are drowning. But in reality...
Well, because every good humor man needs to get a kill to join the gang. Like, that's...
He got jumped in.
Yeah, then they take a break for the winter, come back in the summer, and kill again.
But only like 3% of good humor men survive because they get jumped in by the Klondike bear.
Yeah, that's why the turnover is so high. You have to get a lot of guys who have to, in turn, kill a kid.
And, you know, obviously the ice cream has nothing to do with the deaths or vice versa. It's that both swimming deaths, i.e. drownings, and ice cream tend to go up in the summer when it's hot. So it's not a causation between one or the other. They're both correlated to a different causal effect.
Well, those children could be weighed down by ice cream. I mean,
We always have to keep this in mind. I think the modern day, you know, COVID scare is a good example of this. It is really easy to draw causational correlations as opposed to just correlations when we look at certain data. You know, when you see somebody who's like, let's say famous, like great example, obviously Joe Rogan, you know, he got it and he was sick for a few days. He was unvaccinated and, you know, I think he's in his 50s, like maybe his mid 50s. I don't know. He's pretty old.
It allowed him to suck his own dick. Like it's...
Yeah. So here's the point. People will be like, look, here's a mid-50s guy. He just takes care of himself and, you know, got it and leaves in 3 days. It's like, well, okay, so the correlation that you're drawing is that COVID is only going to kill people if they are sick or infirm. Now, we know COVID kills more people if they're sick or infirmed. But the bottom line is, you know, when you look at the numbers more broadly, you will be able to say, yes, this person did get over this rather quickly. And certainly them being in good health and having, you know, enough money to be able to supply a lifestyle that allows you to take a few days off and all that kind of stuff. That's certainly, you know, a huge factor of it. And natural health is certainly a huge factor of it. But what you can't say is these other people only died because they didn't have this, because we know there's plenty of instances of very healthy people dying from COVID-19. So the causation correlation.
You always forget the Herman Cains.
The ripped Herman Cains.
Say what you want, but he almost got the GOP nomination twice because of his shredded abs.
Article number 2, plain fuel from sunlight.
So poop can be fuel and so can sunlight. Huh. Tell me more, Mr. Plant Scientist.
Sounds like a horrible Taylor Swift album.
Wow, the last guy who broke her heart really did a number on her.
He shit on my car in that alley.
Yeah, so now she's angry at some podcast comedian.
He always told me that was the one thing he wouldn't do. You know that Meatloaf song? I thought this was the one thing he wouldn't do.
I wear short shorts, he shits on cars, and... He's the bad boy. I never thought he'd do it to me, though.
So this is a really neat story out of Germany, because it's now much less academic and much more real. What is the it I'm speaking of? Creating liquid combustible fuel directly from sunlight and air. So this is a really cool process. We've talked about this a few times in terms of theoretical benchmarks it made it to. I think about a year ago, we covered a new catalyst they were using to make this work better. But again, this was all lab-based stuff. So basically in Germany, they've had this kind of like ongoing little production facility on the roof of one of this engineering firm's buildings for like a year now. And it's legit producing like a decent amount of fuel. So what is actually going on? So before I discuss what's going on, the science behind it, let's talk about why this is so important. So the idea of planes, commuter planes going electric the way cars are starting to go electric is a long ways off. And even if, like, all the planes developed tomorrow were electric, which, by the way, none of them are, right? Like, stuff that's in the works for the next 10 or 15 years still isn't all electric. There are some hybrid things. I think Boeing 737 MAX has a lithium power supply. There's a few things, but in terms of, like, going full electric, nah, that's just not in the books. And by the way, let's say it did do it tomorrow, which they're not. Keep in mind, when you hop on, like, a Southwest flight, a lot of those planes were built in, like, 1972.
Yeah, they smell like smoke. Yeah, you can see the cigarette burns. And the.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Well, planes have a really long shelf life because they're so useful, so we just keep rebuilding them and do whatever. So, like, even if you electrified all the new stuff coming in tomorrow, whereas, you know, cars are usually off the road on average in 10 years, planes are not. Planes are still going around for many, many decades. So the problem with planes is not only are they not going electric now, but even if they were, we would still have a huge problem. And huge is the operative word. Planes are a gigantic emitter of greenhouse gases.
Now, what's the problem with the batteries? Just the batteries are too heavy? And unlike the fuel, which is heavy, it burns eventually burns off. And because I know that the Tesla,
yeah,
you press on a Tesla, that thing goes, you know, that thing has power for days, that electric motor. Does that not translate to turbines? Is the electric turbine not as efficient as the...
No. It's not necessarily that. I mean, well, to some extent, yes, but because of the way some of the specifics of turbines. But like the real issue is that it's a tremendous amount of energy to get a plane up into the air and to fly it for a long time. So like even some of the stuff, the hybrid designs they have out, they still use fuel propulsion to get up, and then they just use use the hybrid, like, once they get up in the air to keep going. But it's a tremendous amount of energy. And right now, that's kind of beyond what we do with batteries. It might even be beyond their capabilities in terms of, like, actual power output. And they're just not necessarily a usable source right now. And the problem is, planes are such a huge emitter of greenhouse gases. So the stats on this are mind-boggling, and they might make you feel a little guilty. Like, I personally, since I have learned this, have felt incredibly guilty about any plane flight I've taken. So I'll advise you, if you're a person who likes to feel guilty, listen up. And if not, I don't know, maybe you want to tune out. But when I first found this out, it was devastating to me. Because you think about it, like, I drive a hybrid car, I try not to pollute, I'm conscious of, like, greenhouse gases, like, I don't run the heater in my house, you know, unless we need to, like, just...
My car engine runs on poo.
I have a lot of slaves, you know, and they're not using gasoline, no.
I won't let them.
No, so I think about this a lot, and then I read up on it, and it turns out, if you take one cross-country flight, one flight... That is more CO2 you will put out in the rest of your life driving a car. Food is actually a big CO2 production. The cement that made your house is a big one. Like, if you do it all of that, one cross-country flight is somewhere between 6 months to a year of your entire CO2 production, which is fucking nuts. Like,
that's even including if we break up responsibility amongst all the passengers. I just bear one 300th of that responsibility.
Literally your little segment. Not even just all the passengers, Damien. All the passengers, and because commercial flights also often take, like, deliverable packages and stuff, all of that too. All of that, and it's still so much. I mean, it is an insane amount of jet fuel that gets used to do that stuff. So honestly, if you skip, like, one plane flight, you have done more for the Earth than you will probably do driving, like, a fuel-efficient car and watching out for your carbon emissions all year round.
I have a question.
Huh.
Okay, the pilot, obviously the pilots then in this,
right,
this climate holocaust, the pilots are like the guards, but the staff, do you think the staff, the plane, the stewards and stewardesses, are they more or less culpable than the passengers?
They're profiting, so it's weird, huh? Yeah, see, some of those passengers might actually have to get from point A to point B. Like, it might be for a medical emergency. Most of them don't, but some of them do. So, like, that's probably justified. Flight attendants are just making money. Listen, I'm not hating on flight attendants. We got any flight attendants out there? I love you. I'm just saying.
Somebody had to give me a ginger ale, Bobby. Somebody, what am I supposed to get my own ginger ale?
I think something like plane flight might be the thing we look back on, similar to meat eating, as the thing that we look back on and we're like, man, we were monsters without realizing it. Like, we really fucked shit up and we were not thinking about it. The same way our grandparents' generation, like, didn't have the word litter. They just called that, like, after you're done with trash. Like, they, you know, like, we look back and we're like, what, you didn't look at, like, roadsides filled with trash and realize there was a problem? They're like, nope, that's just the way it always was. Like, I think that's the way we're going to be when it comes to, like, A, eating meat. And again, I say this as a meat eater, so I'm a hypocrite here. But also B, taking plane flights, is the amount of damage we are doing on a regular basis, seemingly nonchalantly. Ah, I got to go on a vacation. Or like, ah, I got to go to a meeting. I'm going to go to this. It's like, man, we are fucking up the world when it comes to plane travel. I forgot what it is. I think aviation accounts for like 20-some-odd% of all greenhouse gases of the Earth. It's really, really bad. If you can avoid a flight, do so. You will be doing more for the environment than driving a Prius for your life.
Question about the electric plane.
Uh-huh.
It's really just getting off the ground from what I heard. So what if we could develop some sort of plane catapult or trebuchet to get it up in the sky, then you flip on those electric motors?
That was a actual thing that happened in World War II at a plane crash in New Guinea, in like the highlands of New Guinea.
Oh my God.
Because they crashed their plane. They kind of like rebuilt it MacGyver style, but like didn't have nearly enough power to take off or anything, or like a runway or anything anyway. So they basically built a plane slingshot and were like, eh, once it gets in the air, we'll be fine.
Was it?
Probably.
Okay, Bobby, so, like, you just read the first half of the story.
It's fucking World War II. Those assholes are dead anyway. What are you talking about? What, are they dead? They died one year or another year? I don't care.
Yeah, they were shot out of the sky by a Zero shortly after. But, I mean, like, yes, theoretically, it worked.
Another thing to think about, we talked about this recently, about lead in gasoline. Leaded fuel exists only in one place left in the United States, and that is in airports, because many planes, now I'm not talking about, you know, 747s, I'm talking about smaller planes, many smaller planes still run on leaded gasoline, meaning we are still spreading lead all around to ruin our kids' IQs and destroy our future so that people can hobby ride in their, like, Piper Cub.
Listen, Harrison Ford has to crash something. If he's not crashing a plane, it's going to be a car. He refuses to do a golf cart.
So while, you know, we could start producing a bunch of electricity for the grid to power things like Tesla cars or our homes, that's not going to be a solution for airplanes. Realistically, probably not in our lifetimes, Damien, or at least not until the really shitty part of our lifetimes. So we have to think of something else. Well, what can we do? If planes are this gigantic, gigantic greenhouse gas emitter, what can we do to make it different? And the idea has been for a long time, let's start producing fuels that are essentially carbon neutral. And how does that work? Well, in this case, they're taking sunlight and CO2 that's already in the air. So you extract CO2 out of the air, you combine it with electricity, you're able to break apart water that's from the air, and the CO2, you can recombine it into ethanol. There's solar kerosene, which is another version of this, but basically you're manipulating the way these molecules reassemble, and you're assembling them usually into some kind of hydrocarbon. Now, you're still burning this. You're burning this just like you would burn any other jet fuel. The difference is, this fuel didn't come from sequestered carbon underneath the ground from millions of years ago. It came out of the air. So it's carbon neutral because, yeah, when you burn it, you release carbon, but you already pulled that carbon out of the air to start out with. So at the end, there's a zero carbon emission in it. As a matter of fact, if this was a large enough process and we were constantly making fuel, it would actually be a net carbon sequestration. Because if you think about it, at any given time, there will be, you know, millions of gallons of this fuel lying around that is essentially carbon pulled out of the atmosphere, waiting to be burned and put back in the atmosphere, but not yet. So there will always be like thousands or millions less units of CO2 in the air because it's stuck in somebody's gas tank somewhere.
What about high-speed rail or hyperloops? I understand crossing the Atlantic.
Sure.
And the Pacific, crossing oceans, but I mean...
That would be great, but think of the infrastructure involved in that. Those are gigantic projects. Those are projects that if we went full steam ahead, totally funded, balls to the wall, they might be 25 years out, especially if you're talking about, you know, nationwide use. And same thing with electric planes. We just talked about how there's no electric planes coming. We still have all these other planes. But here is why this solution is so great. You dump this fuel into the existing Boeing 737 that's sitting there from 1975. Like, this is why it's so great. You don't need to upgrade the infrastructure other than the infrastructure to actually make the fuel. You don't need to completely replace the planes. You can continue to use what we currently have that's around for the next, probably going to be around for the next 50 some odd years. You can continue to use that in a way that is carbon neutral. I think this is an incredibly exciting article. The fact that it has gone from, we talked about this being theoretical, than them saying, look, we found these catalysts and it kind of works, to now they're actually producing this at a usable level and all they have to do is scale this up. This is really big news, and I hope this takes over the aviation industry so I can start flying without guilt again.
Make our current rail system more fun. Also, give people a lot more vacation hours because they're going to need it to get across the country on a fucking train.
That's true. Yeah, it should be more fun. Like, you know what? I've been on a few train lines and I have never once seen one of those things that was promised to me in cartoons where it's like two guys on a teeter-totter on a on a train cart and that's how they make it go.
So just hire local performers to entertain people off the side.
I was led to believe as a child that I would be, like, no less than a dozen instances would I find myself pushing up and down on that teeter-totter. By the way, sometimes sadly by myself, without a partner on the train car with me, just in order to get somewhere.
Well, I mean, you'd also be doing it frantically to escape a train. That was half the...
That's true. Yes. Yeah, nobody thought of going left or right, but... Oh, dear. Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 587, where you learned all about causation versus correlation in terms of autism gut research and how we might be able to fly guilt-free pretty soon. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 588.
Bobby, I hear what you're saying about cartoons not teaching valuable lessons to kids. So I'm starting a cartoon that's going to teach kids how to get out of paying child support.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.